What's going on, everyone? You are tuned into the Boom Bap Chat number 110. We have an excellent show tonight, a great conversation. Can't wait to dig into it. But before we do, please make sure you go support Everybody's Records here in Cincinnati, Ohio, and Pleasant Ridge. If you're here, go see them. They're open every day. I think 11 to 7 are the hours, and they have a great selection of vinyl, CDs, tapes. They have books. They have all kinds of great stuff. And if you can't get to Cincinnati, it's cool. You can check them out online at everybodysrecords.com. So make sure you check that out. I am MC Till. Joining me, my co-host, one of two co-hosts that we usually have, Iomas Marad. What's up, Iomas?
What's up, brother? How you feeling?
Man, I'm feeling great, man. Feeling
good,
great.
Man, good.
Good to have you on here, and good to be able to hear you tonight and not you in transition. I know 2 weeks ago you were on the bus or whatever, traveling. So it's good to have you back in your lair. And want to shout out Profound, who, once again, if you've been tuning in, you know he's the dad of the year, coach of the year. He's helping coach his son's football team. So they are he's out there on the field. He might chime in a little bit through Facebook or YouTube in the comments, but we'll see. Our guest tonight, this is an honor to have our guest tonight. I've known this man for many years, two decades at least, probably like 25 years. He's a friend of mine. He's a great thinker. He's got a great mind. He knows he can make beats. He can rap. He's written a book, and he's one of the best listeners I know. He's a really good listener, which is a really important trait that a lot of people don't have. Recently, he took a trip to Zambia, and it was a life-altering experience for him. So we're going to talk about that experience, Zambian hip-hop, and more right now. So please join me as we welcome to the Boom Bap Chat one of our own crew members, Mr. Bo Brown. Brad, what's up, man?
Man, I'm feeling good. You just handed out flowers tonight, huh? Already.
Tossing them out.
Feeling great. And just thank you so much for all the kind words that you spoke. And obviously the feelings are completely mutual, and really value you, Adam, MC Till as a friend. Man, and I've also known Io for known you musically for 20, 25 years, and more personally over the last couple of years, and man, such a good brother. So I'm just real happy to be here tonight.
No doubt.
Yeah, man. Glad to have you. And Bo was there when we first started the Boom Bap Chat.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's
110 episodes.
And yeah. I remember when all the brainstorming was happening, and I was like, I don't know, good work. I mean, when we were discussing formatting and all that sort of stuff, and man, 110 episodes later.
Yeah, Bo, I know, right? And Bo is like, you know, now we have a crew of six, so it's the three of us and Profound, who's usually here, and also Joe November and Big Stowe, Michael Stover. But through the years, man, before our crew of Everybody's Hip Hop Label, it was always Bo. When I had an idea, like Boom Bap Chat, I called Bo. Hey, Bo, what do you think of this idea? You know, and
they were always great ideas.
Well, I don't know about that. They were ideas.
9 out of 10.
9 out of 10. I don't know. But they were definitely ideas. So yeah, man, good. It's good to have you here. And if you're live streaming, what up to Marcus and Coop Art that are tuned in tonight? If you guys have any questions or comments about our conversation, about whatever, please comment those live and we'll get them in. We'll try our best to get them in. So, yeah, man, tell us what events led you to going to Africa?
It's weird, man. I remember when I was a kid looking in like social studies books, and we'd be studying geography, and I'd be seeing the world map and everything, and this continent Africa, like right in the middle, always intrigued me. And so as I started learning more about some of the history, at least what was available to me at the time, fell more and more deeply in love with this place that I had obviously never been. A few of my friends growing up had immigrated from various countries in Africa. So I knew, you know, tangentially about the continent. But and then obviously, man, listening to hip hop and getting into some of the Five Percenter stuff and learning about, just being very intrigued by the theology and the anthropology contained within, you know, Five Percenter ideology, and becoming very interested in like, oh, original man coming from this place, that's even cooler. I really want to be there someday. And even if it's just one time, I want to, you know, touch my feet on the ground in this place. But as I've gotten older and, you know, started a life, just the opportunity has not really presented itself to travel, and the expense and, you know, the opportunities just haven't really been there. At least not in a way that I could make it happen. But then a couple of years ago, I started a new job at a software company in Indianapolis. And my boss, I was a consultant at the time, so he was the guy I was consulting with. I heard him talking about Zambia. And I was familiar with Zambia because I was a pastor, and one of the members of the church that I pastored went to Zambia every year. And we even, you know, sponsored a child there, you know, for a while until he was a little older. So was familiar with Zambia. And so I was kind of intrigued with what my boss now, that I'm no longer a consultant with them, it was just really interested in why he went there. I wondered if it was business or something like that. Mm-hmm. It turns out he had been going for about 10 to 12 years, twice a year, on a sort of humanitarian type work. Working with an organization that that basically cares for children that have lost parents, either one or both, to, you know, various diseases, but a lot of HIV AIDS. You know, it's a worldwide issue, so that's hit, you know, places in Africa particularly hard, and so there are a lot of young people without parents. So my boss, you know, he had the opportunity to go 10 years ago and just said it changed his life. The relationships that he had formed with people there, the staff of the organization, the people, Zambian staff, it was really just life transformative for him. And so the more we got to talking about it, the more I was starting to realize, man, I really want to, I want to see if I have the opportunity to go with him. But didn't really know if that opportunity would arise.
Yeah.
Be a conflict of interest or right. something like that. So, but after about a year of working together, he asked, and it didn't work out right away, but then he asked again. And I just felt this compulsion that I've got to make this happen because of that early experience of falling in love with this place.
Yeah.
And just being so interested in the people who live there and throughout the diaspora, so just really, really loved, really got that opportunity to do that. And so it's that's kind of how it came up all about.
Yeah. So you had, you know, you from young age, you had this attraction. What was it like stepping off the plane, you know, stepping your feet on, you know, in Zambia? Like what was that feeling like?
Yeah. I remember the weather was just beautiful. They're in their cool season, which means most days are right around 80 degrees, sometimes cooler, high, and then it gets down to 50 maybe throughout the night. And so it was probably 10 a.m. when we landed, got off the plane, and just felt this like beautiful weather around me. And then the airport in Lusaka is pretty nice airport. I mean, I would compare it to my airport here in Indianapolis. So that was kind of cool. It was like, wow, Zambia is really doing its thing. Like, they've got a beautiful airport. And but yeah, it felt like this culmination of experiences leading up to this point in my life. It felt like a very important moment in my life.
Yeah.
Stepping off the plane onto the tarmac and then being driven to where we were staying while we were there. So it felt like a lot was leading up to this.
Yeah. Before we get into, you know, what you did on the ground there, Iomas, any comments, questions, thoughts?
Yeah, no questions now, but yeah, just hearing Bo reflecting on his trip. I'm making connections to the first time I went to South Africa. You know what I'm saying? Like, that same feeling. You know what I mean? But yeah, this is really good.
I want to hear more about that. If not now, then some other time.
Yeah, but just hearing you, like, that was the same feeling that I had. I always wanted to, like, to go there based on, you know, like you said, you open up any book that has to deal with geography and you always see that shape of Africa. Like, I wonder what it's like there, you know what I mean? And to be able to, like, go from that to actually physically being there, it's an experience, man. It's a beautiful experience. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. 100%.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, all right. So you get off the plane, airport's nice. What was like the day to day work, or like, you know, what did you do, you know, while you were there?
Yeah. This organization, Horizon International, they have operations in 5 different countries in Africa. They do work in South Africa, and they're also all the way up into Ethiopia. So the way this particular location functions is that they have throughout Zambia, which is a decently large size country. So it takes about probably 7 hours east to west to drive, probably more than that even. So it's a pretty large country, but this organization is spread out through a good deal of the country, so a pretty large radius that is consists of little what they call Saturday kids clubs, and so they have a program every Saturday. Kids get to come, they develop their talents. It is a Christian ministry, so they learn about the Bible. Obviously, this is, you know, completely based on the child's and the family's desire to be there. So they're not being force-fed religion or anything like that. They also have a meal. And so really these little communities, mini communities, form with these kids clubs, meet every Saturday throughout the year. Kids start as young as, you know, 6 or 7, grow up being part of kids clubs throughout their life, and then sometimes even come back as volunteers. So that's a lot of what Horizon Zambia does, is building those communities, and there's more to the ministry, but that really is the foundation. And so what I went to do is one of the big rewards for the young people in the various kids clubs is they get 2 retreats at a retreat center every year. So kids from all the clubs come together, usually near Lusaka, which is the capital city, and have a 4-day youth camp. And so there's all sorts of stuff they do. Music, drama, they get 3 meals a day. it's a camp. If you went, if you grew up and you ever went to camp as a kid, that's pretty much, it felt like me being back at Camp Carson and near Evansville, Indiana, our YMCA camp. So the first 4 days, we were there to support the Zambian adults as they led the camp. So, you know, we partnered on developing the schedule, and they took the lead entirely. So in a lot of ways, the American team I went with were there to be in that supportive role, not to be front and center, to support the people who live amongst these kids every day and are mentoring them and forming relationships, long-lasting relationships. So we're there to, you know, run and get them water if they need water, set up a stage for different upfront activities, help with recreation, things like that. So I got to help on resurrection recreation. And so that was primarily, I helped plan games and we went through games and I realized how old I was or I am now, trying to run with those kids. That was a lot of fun. So that was the first 4 days of my time there, of a total of about 8 days. The last part of the trip, we spent 3 days traveling throughout Zambia, probably within a 3 or 4 mile radius from Lusaka, visiting homes of children and families who are sponsored through Horizon. So some of the members of the team, the Americans that went with me, had sponsored these families. And so we went to visit, and the people welcomed us into their homes. Some of the homes were like in neighborhoods and cities. Some of them were far out in the rural area, where they have what are called compounds, family compounds. And so that was just a beautiful experience of being welcomed by grandparents, uncles and aunts into their homes. I was a complete stranger. So we just came to connect with them, and pray with them. Everybody that's involved with the organization is, or I should say, most people have very strong faith commitments. And so going to pray with them, it was like, yeah, come on in. We did that for those last 3 days, and just got to, like, if one of the members of my team was visiting their family and there were some neighborhood kids around, they're like, maybe, you know, don't see much white skin, and so would come up to me and you know, be interested in the color of my skin. And but then we, you know, we'd play games like Simon Says and Hokey Pokey and stuff like that, or had a ball we'd play. And that was cool too.
If you're tuning in, what's that? Sorry.
Kids being kids.
Kids being kids, man. Kids are universal. If you're tuning in, we are talking to Bo Brown on the Boom Bap Chat. He recently visited Zambia. We're talking about that experience. We're gonna get into Zambian hip hop here in a second, but Bo is no stranger to working with young people. And one of those young people is not so young anymore. You remember this guy, Bo, Tyler Young. Tyler
Oh,
Young
yeah, let's
chimed
go,
in and
Tyler.
said, "If it wasn't for you, Bo, I would have never found my passion for writing music. Best youth pastor ever. I remember when I wrote a song and you wouldn't do your part when I performed because you wanted all eyes on me. Love you, man." Tyler Young. Peace to Tyler Young. You remember Tyler?
Yeah, heck
Yeah. I remember I
yeah.
met him once. I remember, at least once, but yeah, I know you had a more of a
Yeah, I love you too, man, Tyler. Yeah, when you came, I think with Wonder Brown to Indianapolis.
Yes.
Doing Kings of Tragedy.
Kings of Tragedy, yes.
You might have seen Tyler rap back way back.
Yeah, I think so. I remember the name and the face. Yeah. All right, so you're there. How did this experience shape you or transform you in any way?
Yeah. So, as you said, I'm a thinker. I spent a lot of time in my head, thinking about philosophy, and you know, I've had so many of those deep philosophical conversations with you, MC Till, and then even with Io as well. And so he knows I love studying. And so lately I had been really digging into this concept of I was just reading the message. Really been digging into in some of my studies, just trying to understand where this this experience of the holy comes from. And you know, it seems to exist among all religions. There's this sense of the holy, of something larger than ourselves, beyond ourselves, even if it's just the people around us. But where does that thirst, where does that hunger come from? And so I've been exploring that desire for the holy or the larger than we are. And throughout my studies, sort of all signs point back to Africa and to where that sort of spirituality first came about or was invented, so to speak. I believe that's where humanity came from. So after studying these things and wanting to experience maybe something that came, some type of spirituality that came from a place that I'd never been before, how that manifests itself and to experience it. And man, after stepping off the plane and meeting the people, it was almost like an instantaneous connection, an instantaneous feeling of acceptance and holiness when I met our hosts, Moses and Cecilia. And then when I spent time with the kids and the young people, and you know, some of them were doing music and dancing, and the place was just so alive, and the people were so alive. And I know they, you know, have you know, different challenges than I do, certainly. But I sensed that I got to experience that sort of holiness through the hospitality, through the music, through the relationships and friendships, and you know, feeling like I was a brother and sister to the people I met within, you know, 3 or 4 hours of meeting them.
Yeah,
you know, it reminded me of being in high school and feeling, you know, I always never really felt like I fit in anywhere, but the group that I always seemed to not fit in with, but feel accepted by the most, were my African American friends. And it just was that same feeling of brotherhood and camaraderie that I feel like I connected with while I was in Africa. And part of it is beyond words, so to speak. But just the feeling of being in the place brought about that feeling of the experience of God, really, I believe.
That's really interesting. You know, I know we've already established you're a thinker. What, you know, there's groups of people, whether it's like, you know, religious groups or like a community group or a team, sports team or whatever, school. There's different groups of people, and some do a much better job of being more inclusive and welcoming. You step in the doors like your family immediately, you're accepted and loved, you know, kind of no exceptions. And some, you know, different groups do a better job at that. What do you think it is? Like, what makes a group have that, like, very welcoming, inclusive spirit?
Yeah, I think there's probably a lot of factors, but one thing I have discovered is that groups that have been under oppression or remain under oppression tend to form much stronger out of sometimes just necessity and requirement, stronger relationships, depending on others to survive, even, you know, mentally and physically. And so there's sort of like a template for how to care for people, because you got to do a lot of caring for people in certain communities where the need for care is just much higher. And so there's a template to, like, okay, we recognize someone who may appear wounded. We're not going to take advantage of that person. We're going to nurse them back to health, because ultimately, like, your success is going to be my success, that sort of Ubuntu philosophy. So there's a template there, I think, to welcome people and to care for people, especially those who maybe don't fit in or seem wounded.
Do you think that type of group of people understand power differently than a group that's a lot less, you know, inclusive and caring?
Yeah, for sure. Like, I think on one hand, you see what it's like to be on the losing end of power. And so it's, I think, much easier to recognize power dynamics, maybe not easier, but more likely that you're going to recognize power dynamics quicker than someone who's on the beneficial side of the power dynamic, because it's, the power is being pointed at you and sometimes crushing you at times. So you're on the lookout because you don't want to be crushed. You want to live and have freedom.
Yeah, that's a good point. Almas, thoughts?
Yeah, I was just thinking to that point. I've been wrestling with, well, not wrestling, I've been reflecting and really thinking about power, like power dynamics. And I just feel like those that's in power, the power that's used as oppressive is fake power. But the power that exists within the people and the community, like you speaking of, like people coming together, to me, that's the real power. You know what I mean? That's, and like, it may appear that those that's in power have the power, but they really don't. They're just, that's fake power that they're manipulating to make it seem like they're more powerful, to make those that's being oppressed feel like they're less than and they're powerless. You know what I'm saying? But in actuality, if you build a community with each other and you have that Ubuntu philosophy, you actually have the power. That's the true power and not fake power. So I really, I'm really feeling that.
Yeah.
I feel that.
Yeah, I think, I hear some resonance of Cornel West and what you're saying too, and thinking about what the cross of Christ teaches us about power, and the Apostle Paul sort of expands on that. But I don't think that needs to be a sort of parochial idea that is only relevant for Christians. I think what the cross reveals, and I think what Cornel West says, is that true power is often expressed and maybe highlighted and brought to life through suffering sometimes, but the real power is in those that being woven together and strongly woven together. Because, you know, if one thing I noticed when I got to Zambia is that on every road, there's probably every mile stretch of road, there's at least one brick seller, so that has brick stacked up on the side of the road. And that was something I hadn't noticed when I'd been out of the country before in Haiti and Mexico. But then I started to look at a lot of the properties around, and there were some beautiful finished sort of palatial homes. But then there were some other properties that had a wall built up around them, but the houses were like half built. And so we asked Moses, why are a lot of half built houses? And he said, people get enough money to buy some bricks. They go buy the bricks. They build the first part of their house, save up some more money, buy the rest of their bricks. And I just noticed, man, I couldn't survive. And I couldn't survive here because I don't have the relational ties. I don't have the ruggedness. Mm-hmm. I think that is grown in tough environments, the grit. And so I recognized, you know, if the world ends or there's the apocalypse happens, what do we need to rebuild? We need strong community ties. We don't, you know, need a lot of the things. What good is a huge stack of hundreds or a title or something? If those don't matter in a different type of system or when the systems are torn down, what does matter at the root of everything is that community, that's where the real power is for survival and flourishing.
Yeah, it makes me think of Mo. Have you seen this Netflix show, Mo?
Yeah, I love that.
I love it.
I binge watched the whole series.
I did. I had COVID a few weeks back. I watched the whole thing. It's super dope. Bo, you'd really like it. Yeah, it's called Mo. M-O. It's loosely based on this comedian, Mo Ammer.
Yeah.
And I heard him in an interview talking about, and I never thought about this after it was either the first Iraq war, I think it was,
yeah,
or maybe the second, I can't remember, but a lot of the business people there that had built up businesses or just like, you know, were doctors and lawyers and all these things, like in a matter of like seconds, like everything was just crumbled. Like people had built up wealth and it was just gone. And they had to move and relocate, you know, all over the place. And a lot of those men that had built up, you know, that wealth and those lives, they died shortly after moving.
Wow.
And it wasn't suicide or anything. It was just like the stress and the anxiety. Yeah. And I think being displaced, you know, not only did they lose everything, but they lost community as well. And like took a toll on their bodies, you know? So I never really thought about that part of that war, which is just devastating.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to check that out. Yeah, thanks for that.
Yeah, Mo, they didn't go into that in the show. I just remember watching an interview with the main guy. But yeah,
you listened to that.
Yeah, definitely. Were there any surprises for you?
I think what surprised me is that there weren't as many surprises as people told me there would be. And it's hard for me to express what I'm trying to say, I think, but a lot of times in Christian organizations, when you're preparing to go to a trip like this, they make it, I think rightfully so. They want people to recognize the importance of, you know, traveling and being spending time and being in somebody else's home and all those sorts of things. And so they want to prepare you for that. But in that preparation, sometimes it can feel like you're going to a different universe or you're going to a different planet.
Right.
And so even if I intentionally said, well, I know that's not what's happening, some of that still creeps in to think, well, I have never traveled this far. It's 8,000 miles away and I'm going through Qatar, which I've never been to the Middle East. I wonder what that's like. And yeah, there were new things. But I think what surprised me the most is how comfortable I felt. And I think that's 100% thanks to the warm welcome I received. Mm. And I know there are racial dynamics at play there. I know there are financial, economic dynamics at work here. I'm the white American coming to visit. And so I've got to be aware of those dynamics. But at the same time, I was invited by my host when I mentioned some of those cultural dynamics to not let that stop me from being present while I'm here with the people and being in relationship with the people that isn't so tied up in the fact that you are different. Yes, we recognize our differences, but my host encouraged me to drop some of those worries that I'm going to offend or step on toes, and just say, well, if you do, we've got brotherly and sisterly love for each other. So we're going to tell you, you stepped over a line, but we're not going to cut the relationship off. Yeah. And so that was really surprising to me, that as a person who really wants to be self-aware and self-conscious, as I interact in the various avenues or venues in which I find myself, to be invited by people that I'm visiting to just kind of drop that for a little bit and to relax was like, oh, cool experience. And I'm not advocating, you know, not being self-aware or self examining your motives and all that, but I love to be in those moments where that drops from the view at the time, and then you can feel that person to person.
Yeah. I love that. I think about this idea of beloved community that I think Dr. King penned. I don't know if it was out there before him, but you know, just this idea that there's something even beyond like being kind and respectful and self-aware, like there's something beyond that. And that's like this coming together where you just kind of, I don't know, you just kind of, is not melting pot, that's not the right terminology, but like you just kind of become in tuned with one another, you know? And like you say, you might say, someone might say something that might come across the wrong way, but it's not taken in that context. It's taken in love and in community, and you know, you just all kind of move forward together. I think that's beautiful, man. That's dope.
Because it's like, it's almost a truer representation of our connectedness, because our DNA says we're all, you know, more alike than different, and that I can be closer genetically to a person who has a completely different skin tone than I am, closer to that person genetically than I am to somebody, a fellow Caucasian. And so that's kind of cool that science is revealing what's so true about our humanity. And we've messed that up in a lot of ways by building these layers of, you know, prejudice and power dynamics and institutional and civilizational power. But it's cool when you can connect with people and it feels like you're doing, you know, what's meant to be done as human beings.
Yeah, that's dope, man. That's dope. I just recently, I think yesterday I was, maybe this morning, I was thinking about this idea of like, you know, within religious settings, like doctrine and dogma. And I was thinking about how I don't really want to know, like, I don't care too much anymore about what people believe as far as like their religious doctrines or dogmas or whatever. But I mean, if they want to share it, fine. But what I'm more interested in is like, what experiences led you to that place that where you have, you know, those belief systems? And I think you can take that in any way. Like what life experiences led you to this point of, you know, whatever that is, like a belief system or your actions or your jobs or your relationships. I think that's more fascinating. And I think that kind of takes down those walls that divide us, because you cannot deny a person's experience. You know, right. You can't disagree with that. You can disagree with doctrine, dogma, beliefs, or whatever, but you can't disagree with someone's experience. And it's like, if we just spend more time cultivating relationships around experiences and understanding around experiences, I just think that would go a lot further than, you know, trying to force feed and like share like what we believe or think. You know, does that make sense?
Yeah. I think that reminds me of that song Compassion off of the Zeitgeist album, the Elzai.
Oh, yes.
And I love that because he's telling the story of being thankful even for his bullies and people that you know mess with them growing up.
Yeah.
It's like, you made me who I am, and these are the experiences that have shaped me the most that were very painful at the time, but man, I'm thankful for who I am today.
Yeah. Before we get into some hip hop, we have to talk about probably the most important thing about any traveling. How was the food?
Yeah, the food was great.
It's very important.
It's not as spiced as a lot of the food I eat normally. It was Northern Rhodesia was colonized. This land was colonized by the British. Therefore, the blandness of British food is present. But thankfully, our hosts liked things with a little bit more kick, or at least they knew we did. So it was awesome. But so we had a lot of just regular like chicken. We had ribs one night. But one of the national staples for Zambia and surrounding countries, although the name for it is different, it's the same food substance. It's called Nshima. I don't know if Io has had it in South Africa. I'm not sure what they call it, but it's like a clumpy grits. Corn maize based, and most people do eat it with their hands. It's just a lot easier that way. It doesn't leave anything on your hand. You don't even need to use a napkin after it.
Oh, wow.
You can dip it or you can just eat it plain. But I think it, to me, it tastes like thick grits that you can pick up and eat. Real good. Probably not super nutritious just because it's corn based,
right.
But it tastes good. So if you like cornbread, you probably like Nshima.
I do like cornbread.
The one thing I'd never done before is eat fish with the eyes still in it. So
I almost I wish our podcast listeners could see his face. His eyes light up. What?
But yeah, so we ate some boiled fish. That was tasted great. So usually ate every meal with the people. Some we had on the run, or as we were driving out to the rural areas. Sometimes we'd stop by the roadside under a big tree and have a little picnic.
Nice.
I think we did that twice. But yeah, the food was pretty, you know, what I'm used to, except the Nshima, which was good.
Yeah. Did you, I'm also about to say something.
Nah, that fish, because I think that's a Caribbean thing. I know in African American culture, we cut the head off.
Yeah.
Right. Caribbean, I think in African culture, they definitely keep the head on.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's kind of weird.
It felt a little, just unusual, but not what I was used to.
Yeah. But yeah, definitely.
I looked around, everybody else was doing it. So,
did you have any conversations with anyone there about hip hop?
Tons. It's
crazy. Please share.
Yeah, so many. Like the first day we were at the youth camp, I saw several hip hop artists on shirts, or you know, popular brands kids were wearing. Saw like a lot of Louis Vuitton logos and you can tell like 100% influenced by hip hop culture,
wow.
Which was cool to see. But the one guy that really stood out to me was Frank, and he's an aspiring artist, hip hop artist, and heard him, got to hear him rap several times. But what made him stand out to me is he was wearing the picture "Ready to Die," you know, with Biggie's, you know, baby photo.
Right.
I don't know, was that actually Biggie's baby photo, or
I think that was his daughter.
That was his daughter. Okay.
I think that was his one of his offspring. I think.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. I'd always wondered that. Like, who is that baby? So, that's cool. That's good to know. But the dude, Frank, had the shirt on. So I walked up to him and I just pointed at his shirt and smiled. And he, oh, it was a kid model.
Roger. There you go.
Yeah, not related to him.
Roger, man, he knows his stuff.
Exactly.
Yes, definitely.
So shout out Roger. It was a kid model, not related to him. So thank you, Roger, for clearing that up.
That's valuable information. Yeah. Thank you. But you know, we connected like right away because of that, pointed at his shirt and smiled, and he spoke, you know, perfect English. So he started talking to me and it's like, you know, Biggie? And I was like, course. So like almost right on cue, it felt like we were in some sort of stage production. We both started rapping Juicy. So it was I think we got through half the verse and then there was a word that wasn't appropriate for that moment. So we stopped there. But man, that was a cool experience too, that connection of you know, that song came out in what, 95, you know, however long ago that was, almost 30 years ago. And this kid was only about 19, I found out, Frank. But just that hip hop and Biggie's influence has traveled so far geographically and through time as well. That was really cool to see. And then I grew up listening to Biggie. He grew up listening to Biggie. And we're apart generationally and culturally. But there's this thing hip hop has brought us together, and that was cool. So Frank and I spent a lot of time together over the course of 3 or 4 days.
Yeah.
Our last day, he actually showed back up and to say goodbye too. So he had already gone home. He lives with his uncle, and he came back to say goodbye. So we connected in such a way that. He felt that was important, which really made me feel good too. So
yeah, it's dope.
Yeah. So probably 3 or 4 people, other people that we connected primarily through our love for hip hop.
Wow.
And R&B and gospel. So that was cool. And it's just some really talented people that are hungry and are recording music and are just coming into the stage where more mobile devices are available. So almost, you know, everybody can start making music if they want to.
Right.
And I even, one dude I met, Prince Sim is his artist name. He's on Apple Music, Spotify, Prince Sim, but,
S-I-M.
Yeah. Like his name is Simon. And he even told me about this this platform. I don't know if I want to advertise it here, but 1RPM. Have you heard of this? It's kind of like a DistroKid.
Yeah.
So he had distributed his music through 1RPM, and so he's like sharing this music, this like, you know, music distribution insider info with me.
Yeah.
Stuff that I think it's actually in a company that's based in Africa. So they distribute your music for free, not $20. They do take more royalties or however much DistroKid is. So I was like, man, I'm getting these music resources that I'm going to take back and share with people.
Yeah.
So people are like really doing their thing. Like I said, I met 4 or 5 people that are all on YouTube that are getting their music out there, that are hungry. There's a hip hop community in Zambia that's been growing for the past 10 to 15 years. So there's sort of a pathway that people are seeing if they feel called to do music, to where they can do that and make money. And it's really cool to see. It reminded me of like what it must have been like in New York and Philadelphia in like the early 90s.
Yeah. Just
that hunger and in the early stages of the hip hop scene. So that was real cool.
Yeah.
Hey, Profound's on now.
What up, bro?
Yeah. Peace, Profound. Would you say is there like a Zambian hip hop sound that you, so, as you're listening to more of the music from there?
What's interesting is that they've really, many artists, I would say probably 75% of the artists I've listened to have been drawn to the boom bap sound. Expecting, okay, there's a new burgeoning hip hop scene in another country. It's probably like a mimicry of what's going on now. Actually, man, it was like a mimicry. I don't even call it a mimicry to devalue it, but like it seemed like the music is written and produced in the style of like early to mid 90s hip hop. Okay. So some artists that are just incredible wordsmiths. And to me, that's proven by their ability to go back and forth between English and Nyanja, which is the language that most people around Lusaka speak. So, yeah. It's boom bap heavy. There are artists who make party music, and there's some stuff that sounds like it's trying to mimic like Kendrick Lamar, which is cool with me. But oh man, Roger said his wife is from Zoom. Oh wow, I'm reading the comments, man.
Thanks for the knowledge on the Biggie Smalls cover.
Yeah,
I don't want to be around here giving wrong information. That's dope.
That is dope. Yeah. So for our podcast listeners, our man Roger said my wife is from Zambia and her parents were deep in the U.S. soul R&B in the 70s. Might partly explain the boom bap. There, so yeah,
absolutely.
Shout out.
Yeah,
super dope.
So beats are dope, just you know what I like. For example, Sampa the Great is probably, I would say, the most popular hip hop artist internationally to come out of Zambia. She's only 29 years old, and her first album, full length album. It really reminds me of The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill in a lot of ways. But I would say she's even an even better rapper than Lauryn was on that album. So there's just like that soulful feel that, you know, Roger said his wife's from Zambia. So it makes perfect sense if they were into 70s soul and R&B that they'd be making that boom bap-ish soulful hip hop now. So yeah, there really is a very soulful sound, very political. Most artists are, you know, referring to local political situations in their music, or, you know, more universal justice type causes. So Sampa is a good example. Her joint Final Form is just dope. I mean, the video, the music, the beat, I think that sample has been used several times before. But man, I thought she's a real spitter. Like she's dope and only 29 years old. So
yeah, she is dope. That album was dope. I think we featured that album in our annual book, whatever year that was. She's super dope.
Oh yeah. Yeah. We did. That's right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Dope.
It might have been volume one.
Man, it might have been. Great time to plug. If you don't have her books, the Boom Bap Review, we're at volume four coming out in November. And this is a good moment to just pause real quick and just give Bo some more flowers. If it wasn't for Bo, I'm not so sure these books that we've been writing every year would have happened, because Bo was the one that knew how to make them, basically like upload them, structure them, format them, you know, for Amazon. And once Bo and I had that conversation and Bo was like, yo, I know how to do this. I was like, oh, then we're going to make books. Also, there you go. Thank you, Ayamas. The next thing I want to say is Bo is the author of this fascinating book. This is called No More Churches. And I highly recommend it. It's just, it's stories, man. It's Bo telling stories that are engaging, are at times very sad, at times challenging. And there's just a range of stories from his experience working in church. And where does it go? Okay. Amazing. He's also an accomplished artist as well. He's got this album here, Clarity, right there. Bo Brown. Boom. And he has this one, Proof of Concept. Bo Brown.
And I love that album cover, man. That album cover is so dope, bro.
Are you like
both
that one?
Of them?
Thank you.
I love that album. The second one. I love that album cover, bro.
Man, I appreciate it.
The beats on here, man, this is the greatest beats I've ever heard.
Beats
are
incredible. MC Till, Joe November.
yes. Let's shout out Roger again, because he's always got great
he's
insight.
Dropping some good knowledge.
Yeah, the apartheid government in South America bombed South Africa bombed in the 70s Zambia because they gave refuge to revolutionaries. On the weekends, the discotheques would be locked down all night for security reasons. That I don't know that word. Y'all know that word? Generation? That generation partied hard to black music from the States.
That's cool. So they probably would have some of the revolutionary, you know, James Brown, I'm Black and I'm Proud type stuff. Yeah, you can definitely hear that coming through in the music. And these are, you know, probably the people making the music today are probably the kids of those people who were in those situations, you know,
right.
South Africa was wilding out. So, yeah, that's cool.
Right on. Before we celebrate some more music, Ayamas, any last thoughts, comments?
Yeah, I just wanted to read this. This was from Bo, and I kept it, you know what I mean? So he said, brothers, I'll be traveling to Lusaka, Zambia this Thursday. If you're the praying type, please send up a few that I'll be able to listen and learn from the people there, that I'll recognize and address my blind spots, and that friendship and unity and partnership will bloom. And I think you accomplished the mission, bro. I think the prayer was answered.
Yeah, 100%. And I remember you, you know, saying that you would put me in your prayers, and and I had forgotten actually that I requested that, and so to hear that again is really special. That really, things did start to blossom there that I think are gonna be, you know, Profound says he remembers that message as
I
well
do too.
God worked it out to where you know, I think this is going to be not just a one-off thing. Mm. It's going to be, you know, lifelong. And that's another thing that I really appreciated about Horizon, this organization I went with, is that, you know, they've got 20, 30-year ongoing relationships with people, and still have a good reputation in the countries where they work. And that's really important, that I'm not just, you know, touching down and, hey, see you once in my life and maybe that's it, and not have any connection. Even though that might, you know, be good in some situations to have that connection with people, just even if it doesn't continue, but I feel like something is blossoming in my heart, and those friendships have begun to form, and I really, you know, it's cool to hear that again.
Yeah. That's dope, man. Super dope. All right. Yeah. We're going to transition into celebrating some hip hop that you've liked through the years, but I do want to give Roger the final word on the Zambia conversation. He, and this is from a little bit earlier when we were talking about the music that they love. He said, yes, they love James Brown. My mother-in-law sings his songs while making, hey, is it Nshima?
Nshima.
Yeah. So dope. Yep, thank you, Roger. Dope. Yeah, that is dope.
Yeah, that's really dope. Man.
All right. Okay, so you, I think you know the drill. You know what we do. This is one word. So I show you the album, and you try to describe it or respond to it, one word or less. All right, are you up for the challenge?
Yes.
Okay.
One word or less.
First one is expansion team, Dilated Peoples.
Oh, evidence.
Evidence. All right, that's a good one. All right, here we go. Next one is Aquemini by Outkast. Mm.
Rosa Parks.
Mm. Oh, heck yeah, man. Heck yeah. Dude, do you think this is their best album?
Actually, no. It's my favorite of their albums, but I do think ATLians is their best album. I don't know. Like, there's something about that album that is just perfection to me. But Aquemini was such a vibe for me.
Yeah.
It came out when I was in like eighth grade, and it just had that wavy thing, like sort of ethereal sound, and it just like swept me up. I remember listening to it every night that summer. I think eighth grade going into ninth grade year. It came out at the same time that as Redman's I think what the album somebody needs to check the math on that, but what's that?
Wait, you said this album came out?
Yeah, I think that Outkast, Aquemini, and one of Redman's, Dox the Name, 2000.
It would have been that, because what was the first album? So the Name. I can see that, man. Yeah. It's funny because I'm the complete opposite. I think this is their best album.
Do you really? Okay,
but ATLians is my favorite.
It is. Okay.
Yeah. I think that musically, I think this album is just, it's just so phenomenal. So Iomas, you be the deciding factor. What which album is better? ATLians or Aquemini?
I can't speak to either one. I'm just going to be honest, bro. All right. I only like Roger. No singles. I only know singles for Outkast.
Roger's putting it to bed. Agree on Aquemini as best. Sorry, Bo, you got outnumbered.
Yeah, it's my favorite.
it's your favorite. Yeah, so that's no loss to you. All right. I don't think they started in Atlanta, but I think they ended up there. I'm not sure if they're still there, but this is Mars Ill.
Yeah.
Their album, Back, what is it called? Backbreakonomics.
Backbreakonomics.
It's kind of hard to see.
Dingy. I had that. I don't need to say more, but man, DJ Dust had those beats that were just, the drums were always a little off beat and had those like real like like saw buzz type sounds.
Dusty
and dingy and grimy.
Dude, this album has one of the best first songs of any album, in my opinion.
Breathe slow,
and even when he like the beat, the way the beat starts and that sample, and then the beginning, he's like, it's the beginning of the ninth inning, and I'm winning, and it's just
you'll find me mind bending inside of each 5-minute time limit. Yeah,
yeah, it's such a great first song. Okay, all right, we're gonna have some fun here now. Here we go. Here's here's an album everybody knows. This is Hunger. By MC, a very young MC Till. You can't find this anywhere, nor will you ever.
$2.
$2.
Because I bought it from you at a show that you performed at.
Yeah.
$2.
$2.
You didn't have, you didn't even have a merch table. You had to run out to your car to get it, I think. So it's like you came not expecting to sell, but realized an opportunity. But
dude,
go ahead, man. No, I just wanted to say the song that you wrote about your grandmother and her Alzheimer's was so dope, and that your storytelling is like early MC Till storytelling that has evolved over the years, and I think you're a masterful storyteller speaking and, you know, over beats. But that particular song was it moved me in a lot of ways, and it put me in the place of what it must feel like to have a loved one, someone close to you, whose mind is not what it used to be, who may not remember you. And so, yeah, that was just really, really dope cut.
Thanks, Bo.
That's amazing. That made me feel more connected to you too, because my grandmother, my grandmother had Alzheimer's.
Oh,
my
did she?
Really?
Oh, wow. Yeah. Wow. Man, that's love, Bo, because you made it through 10 terrible songs to get to that joint. I wish the podcast listeners could see this, man. This is a hand, like I just copied it, like, you know, I don't know, Kinko's or something. Well, maybe it wasn't Kinko's back then, probably. But anyway, I just wrote it. I just wrote the song titles and put hunger with this circle around the H, and that was the art of the album cover.
That's hip hop. That's punk rock.
That's what I'm saying, man. That's hip hop, bro.
That's what you do. You know, all right. Speaking of hip hop, this is hip hop right here. This is Go Ahead by Ayo Mas Morad.
Yes, sir.
Heck yeah.
Yeah, that was my introduction, I think, to you, Ayo. And I don't know, that was probably, I don't know, 03, 04, somewhere around there. And I think it was MC Till said, I met this cat. Or I've been listening to All Natural for a while. I met this cat that's affiliated with All Natural, and is really dope. And I think Adam, you gave me that album. Yeah. And I don't think I ever gave it back. So I don't know. You must have bought another copy or something.
Man, sorry, I almost was cheap, man. Show. I probably bootlegged it. My apologies. I'll give you 10 bro. Bucks, man.
It's all good, bro. It's all good, man.
Yeah, and so like being part of this community, this everybody's hip hop with you is really just like feeling of being starstruck, but like at the same time, so, you know, floored by your humility and kindness, despite you being, you know, brilliant and incredible MC. So, man.
Thanks, bro.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So, all right, we're going to fly through some more here. This is The Grind Date by De La Soul. Yes.
Man, there's so much more to this album, but all I think about is Flavor Flav.
Yes.
But I think it came out like around this time of year. So the weather was getting cool, but you could still drive around with your windows down. And so I was in college at the time, and listening to The Grind Date was like, it wasn't my introduction to De La, because, you know, being around the 90s, you know, with 3 Feet High and Rising and Stakes Is High, was always a fan, but like, the way Dave and Paz were rhyming on that album was just like, they are commanders of the microphone. And Mandilla's beats, that album is just puts me right back in that place of driving down the street with my windows down and just loving life.
Heck yeah. Speaking of loving life, what'd you think about Beats Rhymes and Life by A Tribe Called Quest?
I think Dilla comes to my mind again. Just
Dilla,
His ability to create these soundscapes that draw you in, and like Q-Tip and Fife, and Fife was just on fire by that point. I wrote that article about Fife and Native Tongues Review, and he wasn't always like the most technically skilled, gifted MC. But by the time Beats, Rhymes, and Life came out, he was really like, once again, he's just goes off on that song. So I could talk for hours and hours about this album. And obviously like Q-Tip is just always in the pocket. So it's often not in the top three of their albums on people's lists, but it's definitely my favorite
album. Yeah. Yeah. Shout out to
Rhymes and Fife. I like that.
Profan said Beats, Rhymes, and Fife. There you go. Yeah, I love this album. Okay. Going out to the West Coast, Blazing Arrow by Blackalicious.
Yes. Gift of gab. Gab is the word that comes to my mind. It's really recognized his genius as a writer and as an artist. And then Chief Xcel's beats on that album were just unique and still had that boom bap sound, but you could always hear his signature on the beats. And so that's the one with Alphabet Aerobics, isn't it? Or is that on Nia? Right now my mind is I gotta write that out. Alphabet Aerobics. He goes through letter by letter through the alphabet and his rhymes.
I think that's Nia. Chemical calisthenics.
Has
a similar vibe, but a little different.
Obviously, I need to amazing. Go back and explore Blazing Arrow a little bit more. I remember it being when my eyes had opened up to a wider world of hip hop beyond just was on the radio. Blackalicious presented itself right away, and that was one of the albums.
Yeah, that was dope. Oh, I know.
Didn't he pass away?
Thanks for saying that.
Rest in power.
Definitely. To Gift of Gab. He was so dope.
He seemed like just a good dude, and you know, he started that label or was part of the founding of Quantum Records, and they signed one of my other, you know, favorite artists, Pigeon John. So he really did a lot for the hip hop community beyond just being dope MC.
Yeah, definitely. Speaking of someone that did a lot for the hip hop community, we got Mama That's Said right. Knock You Out by LL Cool J.
Ladies love Cool James. Yes.
Yeah.
Don't call it a comeback. I just remember, like, it was funny, a few years ago, we went to see a movie with some friends, and my friend Henry's from the Bronx and huge hip hop fiend. One of the previews were from one of the Happy Feet movies, and it started off with, "Don't call it a comeback." And then Henry and I just started going through the whole verse. But that, you know, obviously that album's so much bigger than that one song. That's my favorite of his. A lot of people love Bigger and Deffer. But I just think that the way, like, Around the Way Girl was on there. So you really started to see his diversity. And I just forget sometimes that he was so dope as a rapper and still is. Because he blew up and got so famous and, you know, was on TV and has been on TV and was a model and all this stuff. You forget, like, he started off, he was Def Jam Records. Like, what put hip hop on the map to a large extent.
Yeah.
At least Queens hip hop.
And I often, you know, really make a point to say, hey, this is the album that I like. I love this album. This is my favorite. I think this is a personal classic. Very rarely do I say I think this is, you know, indefinitely their best album or this is the best album. But I would make a case that this is definitely his best album. And I would write an essay on it and put, you know, state my, you know, back up that claim. Because I think there's just so much greatness on this album that I mean there's greatness on his other albums too, but just not like this, in my opinion.
It's really like
Marley Marr, his energy
and Marley Marl's beats are just like those drums. I haven't heard anybody else be able to reproduce those Marley Marl drums. I mean, it's just still to this day, man.
Yep. See, Profound agrees. So it's settled. We settled it tonight. This is LL's best album. Mama Said Knock You Out is on here, obviously.
It's not up for debate anymore.
Yeah. There you go. Okay. Yep. We shut that debate down tonight. It's over. All right. Two more. We're going to go to Detroit for this one. This is Zeitgeist, and we're coming to 2022, a release. This is Elzai, yeah. Georgia Ann Moudreau on the beats. One word.
Prolific. Man, that's only
stumped you there for a second, man.
Yeah, I had to really reach for that one, but like, man, just the way that he builds words on top of one another, and yeah. You know, sometimes I've had questions about his beat selection. I've always loved the artists he's worked with, Crisis and Georgia Ann and you know, Dilla. But it doesn't always feel profound. Said he looked like my screen was frozen. I had to really reach. It doesn't always feel like he always picks the best of those producers' beats. But I feel like I would love to just hear Elzai rhyming over a metronome. Like, it doesn't matter to me.
It doesn't matter
what the beat is.
Yeah.
It's just, this man is like, the way that he's able to turn a phrase, and there's a line on there, and I don't remember the whole line, but it ends with something about doing something to proliferate the provolone and just like to, you know, build up your money. And it's just like the way he's able to turn phrases like that is,
yeah,
it's crazy. I love Elzai. That was more than one word.
That's fine. Already Gone in Strange Land are back to back. Two of the best songs of the year, in my opinion. And he's just dancing around those beats like,
yeah,
effortlessly. All right, last
Nefertiti,
one.
Oh. Nefertiti is, I, yeah, that would be another one word. I love that. The way he is like, what is it about you that makes me feel drawn to you, Nefertiti?
Right. So, yeah, that's a dope one. All right, last one. We're going to one of the greatest MCs of all time. I would say the best MC of all time. This is Cheat Codes by Danger Mouse and Black Thought.
I have no words. Man, it's like when I listen to Black Thought, especially on this album, I'm like, an MC shouldn't be this good. Like, you shouldn't be able to be this good of a rapper as Black Thought is. And so, man, in the soundscapes again that Danger Mouse created on that were just so cool and like otherworldly. It felt like an experience. I almost felt like I was watching a movie through the sound, and hearing Black Thought's stories. So, man, I could talk about that album for a while, and I'm going to be listening to it more and more. But it's just beautiful. And in the guest spots, every single one of them is great. Like, you know, ASAP Rocky, LP, like, how is LP, this underground dude, on a Black Thought album? And, you know, okay, this is my last thing. Whenever I start to doubt whether there's good and justice in the world, I remember that the Roots are on the Tonight Show.
Yeah. Like, yes.
There's good in the world. Like, good will prevail.
Yes. I feel that. I made this case that why Black Thought is the greatest of all time. And part of the case I was making was, who else could be on a mainstream Tonight Show and still keep his credibility and still be as dope as ever and still put out a freaking album like this? It's like, you know, 30 plus years into his career, and he's still super dope and making great music. So, and to your point, like, this album could have been like a polished, crisp. He could have gotten, you know, anyone, you know. He goes with Danger Mouse, who's dope, but like, he's not like someone.
He's not doing much hip hop lately.
Yeah, he hasn't been doing much hip hop, but like, you know, he could have got anyone. He could have got a bigger, like, more universally known name, you know.
Yeah.
And he could have had a crisper sound, but this has a raw sound to it. Like the mixing and mastering is just done in a way that makes it sound like it's almost off a tape, you know?
Yeah.
But that speaks to who Black Thought is.
That's what I'm saying. Like
he's staying true to himself.
I love that about Black Thought, you know? Because of that, I think he's making better music than, you know, artists that think success, I got to get the numbers, I got to do this first, and not like, I need to make dopeness first, you know? Right. Which I think Black Thought has always done that, so.
Yeah. Yeah, when I hear him rhyming, when I hear Elzai rhyming, I'm like, these dudes are in the stratosphere. Yeah. Like, they are the Michael Jordans of rap. Like the LeBron Jameses of rap, like and it shows like how much work and blood, sweat, and tears they put into it, but then it comes out sounding so natural. And I agree. Like even the way he was rhyming sounded like he was doing a demo tape before, like Organics or something on some of the songs, like the No Gold Teeth. Like the way that sounds.
I love that song, man.
Yeah, man.
It might be my favorite.
It's genius, and it's like it made me think, like I hope we are finding ways to really recognize the greatness of the music that's being released in our day and age. It's like I want to create a time capsule that's like indestructible, so if the apocalypse happens, they have Black Thought to listen to. It's like the civilization with these scriptures.
totally. That's dope. Well, you said way more than one word on every album, Bo, so you flunked that test, but you pass overall. So
thank you. That's all I'm trying to do in life. Just get through.
I feel you. Well, we always end the show with shout outs. So we'll throw it over to Ayo Mas for the first shout outs, and we'll give you the last shout outs, Bo. So Ayo Mas, who you want to shout out tonight?
Man, you caught me off guard. I'm listening to this Danger Mouse, man. I'm so caught up in studies, man. I haven't been able to like really listen to, we had an event today. So just shout out to, Hard House, and the work we doing at the hip hop education team. We was able to give away some, native tongue books. Some students at U of T, they had to answer trivia questions in order to get a book.
Nice.
But it was dope that a lot of the young, you know, students didn't even know who Native Tongues was. And for us to supply that, it just made me feel good, man.
Yeah, man.
So shout out to U of T, shout out to Hard House Hip Hop Education Team, Zoe, Marco, Michelle Browning, all of them. Shout out to Bo for being on tonight. Shout out to you, Till, and you know, the Boom Bap Brothers, Pro Stole, Joe November, us three. Just excited about what the future holds for us. And shout out to my professor that's, you know, supervising my work, Professor Dr. Rosalind Hampton. Who's probably gonna be checking this out. So man, shout out to her. Shout out to hip hop, man. Shout out to Black Thought. You know, keep pushing out that music, and that's it for me.
Right on. Thanks, Ayo Mas. Echo that. Shout out to the whole crew for sure, and shout out to my man AC the Entity. Just did a album together. I did all the beats. He did all the rhymes, and it's coming out October 14th called Power 2. Tune in every Friday 5:00 on at MC Till, at Everybody's Hip Hop, at AC the Entity, and we're putting out songs, information, we're putting out stuff about the album every Friday at 5:00, so make sure you check that out coming up tomorrow if you're listening in today on Thursday. Anyway, shout out also to everyone buying our books, man. The Native Tongues Review is doing really well. People are buying it. We really appreciate that. Next book, Volume 4, the Boom Bap Review, Volume 4, is coming out in November. It goes on pre-sale in about a week, October 1st. So get ready to pre-order that for a very low price. And shout out to everyone tuning in tonight. Obviously, Pro tuning in from the field. But shout out to Marcus and Coop Art, who's always showing us support. Appreciate you guys. And Tyler Young for tuning in tonight. And our guy Roger who's looking forward to Power 2. Man, appreciate that, Roger. Really do. Can't wait to get your feedback on it. You always give great insight to music. So shout out to you, Roger. Shout out to everyone who's following us and just, you know, advancing dope hip hop. Appreciate you all. And last shout out of the night goes to Bo Brown. Bo, thanks for being here, man. Appreciate you sharing your story with us. And yeah, just appreciate you and the great friend you've been to me through the years. And just thanks for your time and sharing with us tonight. So with that, I'll hand it to you for the final shout outs of the evening.
Yeah, thank you. Likewise. Shout out to my wife and kids. Two twins at home. Shout out to Roger for chiming in several times and offering some more context and perspective. That was real cool. Tyler for reaching out, for tuning in, to my church, First Presbyterian of Connersville, Indiana. For everybody else who tuned in tonight and shout out to hip hop, man.
Heck yeah. Yeah. And on that note, we say
peace.
We'll see y'all in 2 weeks, y'all. Peace.